I love it when we have junior high students serving in our church, like Gabe. That's a good thing. Even if they run at the end, that's okay. Speaking of running, they were all bone tired from the chase, not to mention the fight to the death that followed. David and his men were still recovering from the battle with the Amalekites. His intent, though, had been to take part in a different battle. A complicated political turn of events had placed David and the 600 outlaw raiders that followed him actually on the side of the Philistines, who were at war with Israel and King Saul. No matter how faithful that David had been to Saul, Saul remained mad with jealousy and suspicion, and so he ruthlessly hunted David like a common outlaw for years. Finally, David sought refuge for his fighters and their families in Philistine-controlled territory. He eventually gained the trust of his former enemies, the Philistines, and especially their king, who resided in the city of Gath. Gath, I'm sure you remember, was Goliath's hometown. So when the Philistines mustered their forces to do battle with Saul and the Israelites, David and his men were with them, the Philistines that is, marching in the rear with the king, beside the king of the Philistines. The Philistine king was totally confident of David's loyalty, but his commanders, not so much. They remembered David as the young fighter who had so many years before defeated their champion, Goliath, in hand-to-hand combat, leading to a disastrous defeat of their forces that day. And so these guys, they just couldn't get that picture out of their mind of David holding the head of Goliath up for all to see, which meant disaster for their forces. And they remembered the way the Israelite women sang, "Saul has slain his thousands, David his tens of thousands." They're talking about thousands of Philistines. So the indignant commanders, they were worried that David would turn against them at just the wrong moment of the battle. And so they insisted to the king, send him home, send him back to Ziklag, which was where his camp was in the land of the Philistines. And so they did. The king sent David back. Upon returning to their base in Ziklag, they made a ghastly discovery. The Amalekites, different people, different raiders, had come and attacked their base while David and his men were gone. So it was defenseless. They burned it and they took captive all the women and children of David and his men. It was more than even hardened warriors could take. Everything dear to them was suddenly gone. And they did what men do in those moments. They wept. They wept until they had no tears left. And then the rumor began to circulate that they were going to stone David because he was such a sorry leader. David prayed as he had never prayed before. He sought God's guidance and he became convinced that God was with them. And so David rallied his men and they set out to find the ruthless Amalekites. After a long and arduous search, David and his men finally catch up with the Amalekites and they surprise them in the midst of a drunken party reveling in their stolen plunder. David and his men storm into the camp like hungry lions and they brought a swift and violent end to their party. They recovered everything that had been taken, including their wives and their children, and make it back safely to their camp at Ziklag, where David began to wonder how the other battle had gone, the one he intended to participate in. It was the next day that a runner arrived claiming to have news of the other battle. His clothes were torn, his hair was matted with dirt and dried blood. He was escorted into David's presence and the man fell to the ground to show respect and honor for David as if David were the king. "Where have you come from?" David asked. "I escaped from the Israelite camp during the battle." "What happened?" David demanded. "Tell me everything." "The Israelites were defeated and they retreated in disarray. And many were killed, including Saul, the king, and his son Jonathan." David looked away, stunned by the news, before training his piercing eyes once again on the exhausted messenger. "Are you sure? How do you know that Saul and Jonathan are dead?" "I was on Mount Gilboa. I saw the whole battle. Near the end, Saul was all alone, deserted by his men, severely wounded. Philistine chariots were closing fast. And the king saw me and he asked me, 'Kill me so I won't be tortured by the enemy.' He was dying anyway, so I put him out of his misery. And I brought something for you, David." And the young man brought out from under his tattered clothing a crown and an armband. And he held them out to David, who immediately recognized them as belonging to King Saul. Then he knew that it was true. Saul, the king, was dead. Jonathan, David's closest friend, was dead. David and his men immediately took hold of their tunics and they ripped down hard, tearing their clothes in symbolic grief for the dead. They mourned and wept and fasted till evening for Saul and Jonathan and the Israelite army that had fallen by the sword. Later that evening, the messenger was brought before David again. Refreshed by food and water, he was eager to go before David the second time. Though he had a straight face, inside he's smiling. He thought, "Now I will get my reward for being the first to bring the news to David that he is now the king of all Israel." As he stood before the king, David asked, "Who are you?" "I'm an Amalekite," the young man replied. "Why were you not afraid to kill the Lord's anointed?" The secret smile turned to terror at David's words. Clearly, he had miscalculated how David would respond to the news of Saul's death. That last thought was still on his mind as the sword of one of David's guards pierced his heart. And then David's grieving for his king and for his friend Jonathan began in earnest. Today I'm beginning a new series of messages. I'm calling the series "The King David Stories: Experiencing God in Ordinary Life." Story is the primary way in which the revelation of God comes to us, is given to us. And the David story is the biggest, the most extensively narrated single story in the entire Bible. We know more about David than any other person in the Bible. God called David a man after my own heart. No other king of Israel knew God like David knew God. There's a connection between David of the Old Testament and Jesus of the Gospels. 17 times in the New Testament, we find the phrase "son of David" in reference to Jesus. In knowing David, we come maybe to understand a little better about the humanity of Christ. Not only was David a king, he was a human with a fallen nature. And Jesus, though he never sinned, and was conceived by the Spirit, not a man, was human. The unique message of Christianity is that this Jesus that we worship is fully divine and fully human at the same time. So as we hear these stories of David and we reflect on our own stories, we ask questions like, where is it that God has been with you in your story? Where do you see God working? No miracles in your life lately? Well, that's okay. One of the things I love about the David stories, actually, there aren't any miracles. I mean, some amazing things happen, but no suspension of the laws of physics so that God does something wild, out of the ordinary. See, I'm afraid we think God is only found in displays of the supernatural. And there are miracles. There is the supernatural. And in the Christian life, sometimes we have those. But they're never an escape from our humanity. The entire meaning of the incarnation, God becoming human, Christ coming and being fully divine and fully human, is that He enters our human condition. He embraces it. He comes to save us where we are. We can experience God in ordinary life if we have eyes of faith. In the tragic story of the death of Saul and Jonathan, we observe ordinary life. David grieved, and what that grieving looks like. In 2 Samuel chapter 1, where we get the part of the story of the Amalekite messenger showing up, God is only mentioned one time. The only time God is mentioned is when David refers to Saul as the Lord's anointed. God had anointed David, of course, to be the next king. And it was through the direct line of David that the Messiah, the Christ, would come. And Christ, by the way, means, literally, anointed one. David grieved. And we remember Jesus grieved. And we grieve. Beneath the lament of David for his king and for his friend Jonathan, there is hope. So I want us to take a closer look today at grief. How David grieved, and how maybe we can learn to grieve in a way that honors God and experiences God in the ordinary life. Because grief is fairly ordinary in the sense we all go through it. So, let's go back to 2 Samuel chapter 1. And I want to read the lament of David. A lament is like a poetic writing. It's kind of like a eulogy in a sense. Exclaiming what one feels and remembers about one who has died. Okay? So, it's the end of the story that I described earlier. And now we're going to pick up after the messenger has been killed, and David begins to grieve in earnest. Verse 17 of 2 Samuel chapter 1. David took up this lament concerning Saul and his son Jonathan. And he ordered that the men of Judah be taught this lament of the bow. It is written in the book of Jashar. Your glory, O Israel, lies slain on your heights. How the mighty have fallen. Tell it not in Gath, proclaim it not in the streets of Ashkelon, lest the daughters of the Philistines be glad, lest the daughters of the uncircumcised rejoice. O mountains of Gilboa, may you have neither dew nor rain, nor fields that yield offerings of grain, for there the shield of the mighty was defiled, the shield of Saul no longer rubbed with oil. From the blood of the slain, from the flesh of the mighty, the bow of Jonathan did not turn back. The sword of Saul did not return unsatisfied. Saul and Jonathan, in life they were loved and gracious, and in death they were not parted. They were swifter than eagles. They were stronger than lions. O daughters of Israel, weep for Saul, who clothed you in scarlet and finery, who adorned your garments with ornaments of gold. How the mighty have fallen in battle. Jonathan lies slain on your heights. I grieve for you, Jonathan, my brother. You were very dear to me. Your love for me was wonderful, more wonderful than that of women. How the mighty have fallen. The weapons of war have perished. What do we learn about grief from this story of David and from the story of Jesus as well? I think a number of things that I call good grief. I think we're going to good grief. There we go. I knew we were going to get there. And there's a number of things we learn about this. And let's just dive into it. First, grief needs to be expressed. Grief must be expressed. Grief is one of the most intense emotions of humanity. Tsar Li is the first word in Hebrew that David speaks in chapter 1, verse 26. It's translated, I grieve. But that's a little generic. The word means straits or distress. In Hosea 5:15, the same word is translated misery. In Job 7:11, Job uses it in this sense, I will speak out in the anguish of my spirit, tsar. The word in its most literal meaning is narrow or tight. It's used in Numbers chapter 22, verse 26, to describe a pathway that people were marching that became too narrow, too restrictive to travel through. So this grief that David describes is extremely intense. It's like the whole world is pressing down in on him, crushing his spirit, crushing the life out of him. Have you ever known that kind of grief? I'm guessing you have. A woman came to me with a problem once years ago. Turns out she was just riddled with guilt because she could not get over the death of her mother. She defined faith as being so sure of heaven that showing any sadness for her departed mother would be the sin of unbelief. She had never allowed herself to express what she truly felt about losing her mother. She never really engaged in lament. How tragic. I assured her, God gives you permission to grieve. Eugene Peterson, one of my favorite authors, he writes, lament isn't an animal wail, an inarticulate howl. Lament notices, attends, savors, delights, details, images a relationship. Its pain entered into, accepted, and owned can become poetry. It's no less pain, but it's no longer ugly. How tragic that a person would feel guilt in grieving. David does not swallow his grief. He expresses it. This man's man, a warrior who looked the mighty Goliath in the eye and did not blink, who led men into battle numerous times, mourned and wept for Saul and Jonathan. And we see the same thing in Jesus. Do you remember when Jesus showed up in Bethany? He was called by Mary and Martha, two sisters, because their brother Lazarus had died. And Jesus kind of, you know, dilly-dallies. He doesn't get there in time to heal him before death. And so Jesus is standing there at the grave, and the women come out, Mary and Martha, and they're crying, and everybody around is crying. And what does Jesus do? Stop crying. Be a man. No, he doesn't do that. You know what Jesus does? Shortest verse in the whole Bible. You can memorize it today. Jesus wept. That probably doesn't give justice to what Jesus did. I think he wept till he had no tears left. I think he grieved. I don't think he cried for 30 seconds and then did the whole, you know, raising him from the dead deal. I think he grieved because death is the enemy and it hurts. So he grieved. The son of David wept passionately at the tomb of his friend as David wept for Saul and Jonathan. David expressed his grief through his tears and through the writing of a lament. So in times of great loss, God says, weep. I gave you tears. Use them. Weep. It's okay. It's good. In your weeping, you honor me. Grief needs to be expressed. Good grief needs to be shared. Grief is best expressed in the company of others who share the pain. David and all his men grieved together. Did you see that? Well, I didn't read verse 11, actually. I was telling the story. Then David and all his men with him took hold of their clothes and they tore them. They all together grieved the loss of Saul and Jonathan. And David was probably the only one who had a very personal relationship with the king, who had been like a father to him before he went mad and tried to kill him. And Jonathan was his very best friend. But they all grieve together. Then David, he teaches his men this lament that he wrote for Saul and Jonathan. Did you get that? He ordered that the men of Judah be taught this lament. That's a lot of men. That's thousands of people. So he writes this, and then he teaches it to them, and they all say it, probably sing it, together. I'd been a youth pastor for just a very short time. I was very young, I was very inexperienced, when I received a call that one of the girls in our church, in my youth group, had committed suicide. Christy was only 13 years old. Her father was an elder in our church. It was grief like I had never seen before. The family was in shock. They didn't know what to do. Her father told me, there'll be no funeral. Now, I didn't think that was a wise decision, but he insisted that this was their daughter and it was their pain alone. And then at the funeral home, Christy's classmates began to show up. Two or three at a time, they kept coming. I'm not sure how they found out which funeral home it was at. Nothing had been announced. But they found out. And they began to show up in twos and threes until there was a group of 40 or 50 kids, junior high kids. And they're milling around at the funeral home in complete confusion. They don't know what to do. They don't know how to express their grief. So I went back to the room where the parents were, to Christy's parents. And I said, would you reconsider this decision not to have a funeral? You may not want a service, but your daughter's friends, they need it. They need to show their love and respect for your daughter. They need to express it to you. They need to grieve together. It's not your pain alone. The school and the entire community and your church, we share this pain with you. The parents, they agreed to a brief service at the funeral home. And when I passed the word among the kids who were there, they were so relieved that they could come to a place together and grieve together. A funeral is a way to lament. To not have a service is to say her life didn't matter, didn't count for anything. And as tragic as her death was, Christy's life mattered. It mattered to us. It mattered to her friends. Certainly it mattered to her parents. And it mattered to God. The shared expression of grief in that brief little service that we had brought surprising comfort to her parents. No, it didn't take the pain away. That was a deep, deep wound. But it helped for them to know they were not alone in their grief. Grief needs to include giving thanks to God. Sometimes that's hard to do in the middle of the hurt and the pain. But we've got to give thanks for the person that we loved. David's lament included the glory of Saul's victories. Eulogies are helpful in the grieving process. Notice David didn't point out all Saul's shortcomings and sin. He could have. He was well aware of all of them. Instead, David teaches his men to sing Saul and Jonathan. In life they were loved and gracious, and in death they were not parted. They were swifter than eagles and stronger than lions. Sometimes I'm called upon to do funerals for people that I don't even know. And sometimes you find out the deceased person maybe wasn't the nicest person in the world either. So I sit down with the family and I ask them, share with me your best memories of this person. Share with me what you will miss from your grandfather or your father or your mother, whoever it is. Tell me these memories. You see, what I'm looking for is specific ways that this person who died reflected the image of God in whom they were created. And I want at the funeral service to repeat those ways in which this person who wasn't perfect, who may have been terribly flawed, did reflect the image of God. And I want to do that so the family can focus on those good things and give thanks, even as they grieve, even as the tears flow. And last, grief needs time. The lament of David poetically asks how the world can go on without the ones he grieved. That's verse 21. O mountains of Gilboa, that's where the battle happened. O mountains of Gilboa, may you have neither dew nor rain, nor fields that yield offering of grain. For there the shield of the mighty was defiled. Okay, that's poetry. Do you know what David means by that? He's questioning how could the normal patterns of life with dew and rain and crops continue in this place where this terrible disaster had occurred. It's as if that David is saying the whole world needs to stop, at least for a little while, and recognize the fallen. As in fact, David and his men do. Stop and recognize the fallen and honor them. Our culture tends to rush this whole grief process like it's a necessary evil to get past or get over. David and his men wept and mourned and fasted until evening. In the previous chapter, 1 Samuel 31, we read that the men of Jabesh-Gilead, who went and got the bodies of Saul and Jonathan, buried them, they fasted for 7 days. I remember the traffic that continued to fly by the funeral home at my grandfather's funeral. As if his life didn't really matter. The world goes on anyway. Who cares? And I remember just wanting to scream out, could the whole world please stop just for a few minutes for this man that I loved? Now that's irrational. The whole world didn't know my grandfather. And besides, people die every day. Just open the newspaper over that obit, and there they are. But for me and my family, we had to stop. We had to make time to grieve and lament a man we loved. Rushing back to work and rushing back to get things back to normal is a way of suppressing the pain. But if we're not careful, we minimize the meaning of life and death. That's why it's important to show up at funerals. Because when you show up at the funeral of a friend or a church member or a neighbor who's lost a loved one, you show that person that you care enough to stop your life just for a short time and honor life and death. To quote Eugene Peterson again, David's lament over the deaths of Saul and Jonathan draws us into the depths of a healthy human spirit as it deals honestly and prayerfully with devastating loss and all its attendant emotions. David lamented because he cared. Life matters. So we learn to grieve in a way that honors God and brings healing. Now, I've asked my wife Sandy to come and to lead a brief response to the message. And I asked her to come because she has studied grief and lament more than anybody else that I know. And she knows grief personally, having lost both her parents in life. And she has walked with many through their grief. So she comes with some experience and some understanding. And so I asked her to come and to share this with you so that you can respond to this message. Sandy?
I want to invite you to do what David did, to write a lament. I want you to think of somebody right now that you have lost. It may be a fresh loss. It may be someone you lost long ago. But if tears lie just under the surface when you think about that person, it may be an indication that you haven't given yourself time to express that grief. So what I would like for you to do is get a pencil out and write on your bulletin, get a pencil or pen out, and write on your bulletin, "I miss," and write down a name. I miss my mom. I miss my granddad. I miss the baby that never got to be born. Whatever it is that you miss in your life, you'll write that down now. And then, what is it about your loved one or friend that you miss or that you grieve for? Think about that for a minute. I'll no longer be able to talk to my mom on the phone when I need her. I'll no longer be able to take fishing trips with my granddad and me. I'll never be able to hold my baby in my arms or experience her first steps or first day of school or all those firsts. What is it about the person that you lost that you miss? And write that down. And then, how did this loved one reflect the image of God? Mom had so much wisdom to give, and she was always available for me. Granddad, I knew he loved me unconditionally and made me feel special, and I always felt safe with him. My baby was so loved and wanted and designed by God before her mom and dad even knew each other. What is it about this person that reflects the image of God? Then write that down. And then finally, thank God for this person. Thank you for my mom. Thank you for my granddad. Thank you for this baby, even for a short time. And write that down. Thank God for that person. And if the tears come, let them flow freely, because they're an important part of grieving. It's healthy to cry and feel the depth of a loss. We hurt much because we love much. And the intensity of pain will lessen as time goes on, and we continue this process and experience grief. But the memories of your loved one will be there forever.
I don't need that. Thank you, Sandy. I hope if you began that process, you'll take it home with you. Because grief is not something we can take you through in 5 minutes here at the end of a service and suddenly it's all better. But it's a process that God gives us that brings hope. Because you see, pain is not the worst thing. Being separated from the one you love, that's not the worst thing. Death, that's not the worst thing. The worst thing is trivializing the honorable, desecrating the sacred. And together we form a community of faith that deals with death and loss with each other in the context of God's love and sovereignty, which is expressed finally in the hope of resurrection. I'm going to invite you to stand and let's try to sing together. I know this was pretty serious today, kind of heavy, but an area we probably need to grow in together. And I think that's good. So let's sing together, and then after the benediction, Sandy's going to be here, and I'll be here in the front, and we'll have some others who will join us. And if you need someone to pray with you about your lament, maybe you just need to share the hurt and ask for prayer as you begin to recover in expressing that grief. You come and we'll sit down with you for a few moments and pray with you today so you can begin or continue that healing process. Let's sing together.